U.S. lawmakers have been expressing concerns about powers that allow the president to target and kill terror suspects inside the country. But for years, human rights activists have been campaigning against the use of assassination drones outside the U.S. in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, and Yemen. So do drone strikes conform with international law? And how real are concerns that U.S. drone warfare is going to set a dangerous precedent? This is The Debate.
The U.S. is reportedly planning to put the mastermind of last month's attack on an Algerian gas facility on the government's kill list. The plan is seen as a pretext to significantly expand Washington's military presence in Northwest Africa, which technically extends drone strikes and other lethal operations to the region. The plan comes as the U.S. president's pick to head the CIA has recently defended the legality of such attacks. John Brennan, a former CIA man and the White House's counterterrorism chief, is viewed as one of the chief architects of the rapid expansion of Obama's drone program. To some, Brennan's hands are dirty, as not only does he support the drone war, but harsh interrogation techniques such as waterboarding took place while he was previously at the CIA. In his confirmation hearing at the Senate on Thursday, Brennan argued that drone strikes are more clinical than artillery or bombs because they reduce the risk of collateral damage. But facts on the ground show that civilians are regularly killed in these attacks, even in countries that the U.S. is not at war with. A recent UN report confirmed that hundreds of Afghan children have fallen victim to America's operations in the country in the past 4 years. Although U.S. drone strikes began under the administration of former President George W. Bush as part of the so-called War on Terror, they have been stepped up significantly after Obama took office in 2008. The drone killings are allegedly conducted on a case-by-case basis, and the targets must be an imminent threat. Human rights groups, however, warn that this definition is far too broad and effectively gives Obama a carte blanche to authorize the killing of anyone his administration considers a threat. Analysts believe the U.S. drone attacks and military expansionism would only backfire and create more enemies for the United States.
For every drone strike, we are creating far more enemies than we had before the strike. And it's only a matter of time till other people begin to use the drones on us. I mean, doesn't anybody in Washington think like a rational human being? Apparently not. It's just utter stupidity. And, I mean, since when does the president have the right to target individuals for murder? And that's really what it is.
Washington, however, does not seem to have any regard for international law, as it has hinted that it will increase its drone strikes both in number and scope. The U.S. government is moving to further institutionalize its lethal raids with a manual of rules. This despite condemnations by the United Nations, rights groups, and law experts. Now, if Brennan is installed as the head of the CIA, the use of drones is clearly going to be business as usual. Whether they are viewed as legal or extrajudicial killings, drones will continue to be used by the U.S. government, and people continue to be killed by America's silent killers.
Well, joining this edition of The Debate is the former U.S. Senator and Democratic presidential candidate, Mr. Mike Gravel, who's with us here in Tehran. Welcome, sir. I'd also like to welcome our guest in London, former U.S. diplomat George Lambrakis, and founder of StopImperialism.com, Eric Dreitzer, is with us live from New York. Welcome, gentlemen, to The Debate. I'll start my first question with our guest here in Tehran, Mr. Mike Gravel. Now, let's look at how John Brennan, Mr. Gravel, has been describing drones. He says that the use of drones is, quote, very judicious. Drones are used only as a, quote, last resort to save lives when capture is impossible. Now, what do you think about that definition?
Well, first off, the principle is to capture and to put them through a legal process so that you're sure you're capturing the right person. So now we've dispensed with that. And that's why we're in violation of the U.S. Constitution. We're in violation of international agreements that have been hammered out in Geneva. And so we are going to create the greatest problem for the United States that we've ever had. Because as we go around the world killing people arbitrarily, and I say arbitrarily because it's all you got to do is have some bureaucrat in government make the charge, and that person's life is forfeit. This is not the way to be able to morally participate in world affairs.
Right. Senator Gravel, there, on his opinion. I'd just like to go to our guest in London on this as well, George Lambrakis. Now, the Senator's telling us there that he believes these drone attacks should be considered as illegal. The UN, we know, directly questioned the legality of U.S. drone strikes in a 2010 report by law professor Philip Alston. And he said outside the context of armed conflict, the use of drones for targeted killing is almost never likely to be legal. So can drone killings be justified, you think, as anticipatory self-defense, as it's been described by some?
Well, I think so, because I think the problem comes when you are dealing with terrorists, people who are perhaps in a different country than their own, and you're dealing with parts of countries or countries, entire countries, that can't control the territory in which they are. In theory, under international law, when it works perfectly, every government, every country is supposed to control people so that people in that country are not attacking another country. If someone in Yemen attacks the United States, or someone in Pakistan or Afghanistan attacks American targets outside, as has happened in many parts of the world, in Africa as well, then how is the United States supposed to react if the governments of those areas can't do anything about it? Are they supposed to go to war with Yemen and with every other country that has a terrorist carrying out asymmetrical attacks? And by the way, they don't worry about killing civilians either.
Right. Eric Draitzer, let's have your view on this as well. What can America do, as our guest there in London is saying, when the threat, he says, exists and the governments involved cannot do anything about it and those terrorists are killing civilians as well?
Well, my first question in response to the previous speaker would be, how does he know who is or is not a terrorist? This is merely a designation by those in power in Washington and in the imperial capitals around the world. To say that you're going to have a precision drone strike against a terrorist presupposes that you've proven that that individual is a terrorist. And as we know from the New York Times expose and from many other accounts of the way in which the Obama administration handles the so-called kill list, there is no such verification. There oftentimes is no hard concrete evidence of who the individuals are. More to the point, it is a blatant violation of international law as well as the U.S. Constitution to be executing an American citizen without due process and against international law to be executing any individual without due process. So to say, to couch this entire debate in the framework of killing terrorists is a totally straw man argument and one that I think exposes the shallowness of this debate.
Yeah, before we go to our guest in Tehran, let's just get our reaction from London as well on this. Ms. Lambrakis, what's your response to that? Because there has been a lot said about the precision of these drones. How can the U.S. basically distinguish between the terrorists and the civilians?
Well, how does anyone distinguish when there's a war on, when you send troops, when you send airplanes, when you send missiles, which every country, especially Iran right now, is racing to develop? When you are sending these to another country, does the previous speaker expect to go out there and send back a message, look and see if that man is a terrorist, try him on the spot, and then later say, okay, now you can shoot him? And also, I don't think you want to confuse this with a different, slightly different argument, which is American citizens, for which I gather in the United States right now, there's a good deal of discussion whether American citizens should be dealt with a little differently than people you're at war with overseas.
Okay.
The Army or the Air Force has a perfect right to target people they think are the enemy.
Well, let's go to Mark Gravel now in Tehran. Senator Gravel, what do you think about that? I mean, should these two cases, first of all, be treated differently?
Well, two facets of what he said. One is the policy that's written in writing clearly does not limit the geography to foreign countries. It includes geography in the United States. So when we get in the habit of killing people on American soil, well, you can make this, which I think is just as immoral to try and make that argument about people abroad. The other thing that my colleague in London said, that he said about Iran building a nuclear bomb weapon. Did I hear you correctly?
No, I said that they are building missiles. missiles, ballistic missiles, which many countries are building.
Having the ability to acquire missile technology? They just sent a animal into space. And so, and this offends you? Does it offend you?
If you think that the missiles, if you think that the missiles are only to send animals into space, I think we're living in the wrong century right now.
Well, with all due respect, China. I mean, Iran has not been to war in over 200 years. And what would lead you to believe that they are a threat to the United States or anybody else in the world? What evidence do you have?
I'm sorry, Senator. I'm sorry, sir, but Iran was at war from 1980 to 1988.
And whose fault was that? That was the United States that instigated Saddam Hussein to invade Iran.
Gentlemen, we are diverting from the path of the topic of the program. I'd just like to stop short this discussion because we're going to take a look now at one of the comments that have been sent by one of our Facebook viewers. We'll take a look at that comment right now and we'll be back with the discussion and the continuation of discussion. On our Facebook page, we raised a question. We said the U.S. is being accused of ignoring mounting criticism over its assassination drone program. Is the U.S. drone war setting a dangerous precedent? And why? Share your views with us. Now, one of our viewers there has told us that no constitution in the world allows a suspect to be targeted and killed with drones without giving him a fair hearing. Now, and on that case, a lot has been said. Let's go to our guests in New York on this, and we'll come back to our guests in London and Tehran. Now, Eric Dreitzer, what does basically the law say about this? I mean, we've got the case in Afghanistan. The U.S. can say that it's in war there, but is the United States in war, for instance, in Yemen or in Somalia or in Pakistan right now? And when these targeted killings occur, even if those killed are terrorists, shouldn't they be given the right to a trial, to some kind of hearing, as our guest there, as our Facebook commentator there is telling us?
Well, I think that this is a critical point that's being made here, and that is that the United States, and in particular the Obama administration, but the U.S. regime in general, is attempting to use drones and the unmanned aerial vehicle policy as a way of redefining what war actually means. That instead of having an official declaration of war and an invasion in the War Powers Act and following the traditional procedures afforded to the commander-in-chief in the United States, instead they're able to have a global war without boundaries, without time limit, and that the drones are in fact one weapon in this war, that it is an undeclared and undefined war with no strategic objectives that essentially allows the United States to commit whatever atrocities it feels it must in order to achieve some abstract and intangible objective. And I think that the guest in London was pointing out something that I've pointed out many times, though I think not in the way that he intended to, and that is that the United States has no legal procedure for defining who is an is not a terrorist, nor do they have any intention to do so. The drone is part of an international killing capability that the United States uses to achieve strategic aims.
Well, Mr. Lambrakis in London, let's have your comment on this as well. And I'd just like to mention, Washington does count, according to the reports that we're getting from various U.S. media, all military age males in a strike zone as combatants. Now, that has raised a lot of questions. Some are asking, does this even have a legal precedent? And others are saying that the White House is giving a lot of figures about the militants killed, but why isn't it not transparent when it comes to the number of what it calls collateral damage, the number of civilians who've been killed? We don't have precise numbers coming from the White House on that.
Well, I think you've asked a number of questions. First of all, international law is far broader than what is being described here. International law has had to work with guerrillas, with terrorists, with a variety of asymmetrical warfare, and there are all kinds of rules and regulations, and it gets very complicated, and it is far, far more complicated than is being discussed here. As far as whether people can be identified, I suspect that the U.S., whether it was fighting with troops in the field, as perhaps in Vietnam, let's say, or whether it's fighting with airplanes, it's very difficult to count the exact number of people that have been killed by collateral damage unless you take over the area You look and you count,
right.
And
well,
you
Mr.
also
Lambrekis,
ask people who they are. So it's
I'll
difficult.
Stop you if I may, because we are short of time. I'd like to have all of your comments in here. In Tehran, Senator Gravel, speaking about the legal points, so I guess there in London is saying that the context of international law is a lot broader than what's being discussed in this program. We have, of course, in a June report in 2011 to Congress, the Obama administration, I'm quoting here, explaining that drone attacks do not require congressional approval, for one, under the War Powers Resolution. That's one aspect. And then we've also got the authorization for use of military force, the AUMF, which they use as a justification for these drone wars. What do you think about the context of international law and U.S. law in this?
Very clearly, the concept of terror is not a war. That's the first problem that needs to be overcome. Terrorism is a tactic of individuals. It's not a nation-state approach to war or defense. And what we've done is by calling terrorism a war, we're able to provide the economic justification for the military industrial complex to globalize itself through NATO and for the profit motives that these companies make in selling these weapons. But it comes back to a very we're talking about a principle that goes back to Runnymede, where it's vital, whether it's a United States citizen or a foreigner, we should have concrete proof for the person to be able to defend themselves when they're charged. And now they're being charged with a crime by faceless bureaucrats. Now, if anybody has any experience with government, you know how far afield the bureaucratic approach can be to arriving at a concrete decision. And so I think it's horrible. It's the use of drones and this change of morality that the American leadership has experienced is the change of morality that we experience with the use of atomic bombs. And so you're going to find that the backdraft on what we're doing is going to create more terror, put more Americans at risk than if we paid attention to our own defense rather than being around the world with our 700 plus bases that we feel threatened by people who dislike us.
And Eric Dreitzer, I'd like you to comment on the issue of the legality of these strikes and the international law that we raised earlier. We've got the President Obama saying that these drone strikes, I'm quoting here, do not involve sustained fighting, active exchanges of fire, and involvement of U.S. casualties or a serious threat of such casualties. And this is why he says we don't need congressional approval for these strikes. Now, your response to that?
Well, I think that the Obama administration proved itself and its definition of war with the context of Libya. We saw that the Obama administration essentially tried to claim that Libya was not a war because we didn't put troops on the ground, despite the fact that the Libya war was an initiative, at least to in large part, to the United States and the NATO powers. And we've seen that the Obama administration has little to no interest in following international law. And I want to just return to a comment that I made earlier, that the drones allow for a redefinition of war. Notice that we have no idea. The gentleman in London mentioned a couple of different countries where the drones are operating, Yemen and elsewhere, but we have no idea how many other countries they're operating in. We know confirmed drone strikes in the Philippines. We know a drone base exists in Djibouti, another one being constructed in Niger, ostensibly to patrol West Africa. How many more countries is the United States involved in placing their drones? Is this a global empire that is propped up by the use of unmanned aerial vehicles?
Well,
and what
there,
moral
Eric,
questions does this raise?
Yeah, I'll stop you there if I may, because we've just got time now for a second comment that's been put on our Facebook page. Let's just take a look at that second comment and we'll be back with this discussion. One of our Facebook commentators by the name of San Bangash, the name that he's used on his post, has been telling us that I belong to the tribal area. I know the effects of drones on the peoples of the area, especially kids and females. females, always innocent people killed. If the same happened with your kids, what will be your response? So kindly stop this exercise, please. And that's, of course, brings in the question of humans involved here, people who are being killed. Ms. Lambrake is in London. We've got the independent Pakistani NGO, Pakistan Body Count, claiming that the civilian casualties are from 75% to 80% since the drone strikes began. We've got also the Bureau of Investigative Journalism with other figures telling us that despite the fact that the White House is saying we are targeting militants with minor civilian casualties as a fallout of that, however, the fact that these drones are continuing to kill civilians is creating even more militants, and the number of those civilians killed are very much more.
Well, you're raising a number of issues that make this an interesting discussion, and I think it's very difficult to get at the base of this within very few minutes. But essentially, drones are taking the place of air raids, of troops on the ground. And I don't think anyone is in a position to say that when there are air raids or missiles shot, which is why I was using that particular example, air raids, missiles, troops on the ground, I don't think anyone feels that innocent people are not killed. Drones are just another kind of weapon. Many people assume that they are doing the job with less collateral damage. That is the position of the administration.
Yeah.
Now, if someone can prove that it's more, let them do so, and then we'll see. The problem is it's going after people who are sitting in a place which is very hard to get at, planning an attack, a surprise attack, as happened on September 11th in the United States, which happened on ships off the coast of Africa, which can happen anywhere. And unless you go to where they are, you're just sitting there as a sitting duck waiting to be hit. How do you defend yourself?
Then,
I'd like to ask the other people.
Sorry for jumping in.
Thank you.
Very short in time.
Thank you.
I guess in Tehran, Senator Gravel, The main question here is actually how honest, basically, the White House and Washington are being on this. I mean, John Brennan has said there's little evidence that drone strikes are causing widespread anti-American sentiment or recruits for the militants. I mean, do you think it's being honest?
Of course he's not being honest. All you got to do is travel around the world and you'll realize the amount of hatred that Americans are incurring as a result of wantingly feeling that we are the policemen of the world and we can go kill and subject and intimidate anybody in the world. If we got out of Afghanistan, if we never went in, then why would we have to have drones killing in Pakistan? The same thing in Yemen. Now, isn't it interesting? He makes reference to the Horn of Africa where the pirates were. It took 2 years for this superpower of the United States to even get involved in abating the pirate problems involved. And so now if you want to kill them with drones, that means you're going to have to hit the vessel that the pirates have taken over. It makes no sense at all. If the United States would merely withdraw from these parts of the world and let these people in these various countries address and solve their own problems rather than thinking that we can intimidate and kill them into submission to our will as the American Empire.
Former U.S. Senator and Democratic presidential candidate, Mr. Mike Gravel, speaking there with us here in Tehran. Thank you very much. I'd also like to thank our guest in London, former U.S. diplomat, Mr. George Lambrakis, and in New York, Eric Draitzer, founder of StopImperialism.com. We have run out of time. Thank you so much, everyone, for staying with another edition of The Debate. From me, Homa Lezgi. Until our next program, goodbye.
Thank you, Eric.